At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Quickly, before we jump into today's episode, I'd like to apologise. I accidentally recorded on the wrong mic. It's the first time it's happened since, like, episode 3 of the show. So, yeah, hopefully it doesn't take too much away from it. And, yeah, hopefully you guys enjoy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Knowing Wheel. Episode 111 of your favourite Formula 1 show. And, as always, I'm joined by a man that just this week told me that Fernando Alonso is lucky if he's dating Taylor Swift, and it should be him. Jamie183, how are you doing?
I don't remember saying that. Unfortunately, I cannot promise that today will be free of references to Taylor Swift. But there we go. I'm looking forward to this podcast, and I'm sure that Fernando Alonso is looking forward to once the triple header is over and he can go and see Taylor.
Yeah, fair play. I mean, we still don't know whether it's true or not, to be honest. Don't really
care.
I'm sure
it's not true.
But, like, fair play to him, if he is. But anyway, let's get into the Formula 1, though, Jamie. Of course, finally, we're back this weekend in Azerbaijan, Baku. Of course, a circuit that has delivered drama in years gone by. But the big talk going into the weekend was all around or involving Ferrari, wasn't it? Of course, Charles Leclerc, we spoke about this on last week's show, but again, you know, more speculation about whether he's been in talks with Mercedes, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, fair play to you, you called this in like February.
I did.
So that's going quite well, but Leclerc, instead of putting water on the fire, just put fuel on the fire by saying not yet to the question when he was asked, have you had talks with Mercedes? Which is a bit dumb from him, to be honest, especially when, you know, you're not driving for them and you've got 20 races to go. Well, I think it's just bad on Ferrari, and he's a professional driver. He works for Ferrari right now. So to be stirring the pot like that is a little bit short-sighted in my eyes. But
yeah, but if you want to try and get big money offers elsewhere, that's the kind of pot stirring you got to do.
Yeah, true. But I'm sure Ferrari weren't best pleased with him. And of course, there's technically no spare seat at Mercedes right now, because they're obviously going to try and keep Hamilton if they can. So it will be interesting to see. I think it's on Hamilton whether there is a spare seat available. So we shall see.
We shall. I mean, it's still early days, isn't it? It's early speculation. We don't know what Hamilton's thinking just yet. But I'm sure, of course, as time moves on, I think Charles Leclerc will be in Formula 1 longer than Lewis Hamilton will be, put it that way. Mm-hmm. So he could be a worthy successor to Lewis. And the other big news, of course, is kind of a bit out of nowhere, isn't it? Franz Tost is going to be leaving AlphaTauri at the end of the year, and fair play to him. He's had one of the weirdest roles in Formula 1. I know we bring this up about once every month, but he's done a fantastic job right from the start with Toro Rosso / AlphaTauri, and I think he deserves a retirement where he doesn't celebrate Christmas.
Yes. Yeah, he apparently hates fun, which maybe makes him a good leader of the team, where the pressure is unbelievably high on the drivers. He's going to be leaving the team at the end of the year, replaced by Laurent Mekies, who is at Ferrari currently. But he has done a very good job, obviously. They've had 2 race wins in his time there, when he's been there from the very beginning in 2006. So both at Monza, Vettel and Gasly more recently. They've had, 2 world champions come through that team, and an awful lot more race winners as well. So,
for and about the purposes half the Formula of, 1 grid.
Yeah, exactly. For the purposes of what that team is for, they've done a very good job. And obviously you don't get the same acclaim as someone like a Ross Brawn, who wins championships for fun. But for the purposes of Tauri / Toro Rosso, he has done excellently.
Yeah, he really, really has. And I mean, it's always interesting as well, of course. We had the comments at the start of this year, didn't we, from Franz Toss saying he no longer trusts his engineers. Probably not a wise thing to say, to be completely honest. I'm not a Formula One team principal, but if I was, that might not be the first thing I said. But apparently there is quite a bit of unrest, actually, around Ferrari over this announcement. They feel that AlphaTauri jumped the gun. But to me, I think the big thing there is it probably implies that AlphaTauri aren't moving out of Faenza if they're still hiring other Italians.
No, exactly. And Paul Stoddart will be very happy about that, I'm sure.
Get him on the show.
Yeah, we need him on. Paul, if you're watching, give me a call.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure he's listening. Paul seems like an Apple Podcast kind of guy to me, I reckon.
Yeah, he does, to be fair. He's quite up himself, isn't he? So he probably has an iPhone.
That's not how we get him on the show, Jamie.
There we go. Shall I move on from AlphaTauri to the Big Brother team of Red Bull, and specifically Max Verstappen, who I found his comments really weird pre-weekend. He basically was saying, like, he's not interested in setting records. He's got his contract till the end of 2028, and he'll see what happens after that. It just sounded like he was really down and really, like, not enjoying the sport. And I guess it's kind of the act he's got to back himself on now because he's been so critical of the sprint races. But it was just a weird, like, hill to die on, I felt. So, because I really don't see him retiring from the sport in 2028, but that was kind of what he was making out will happen, which was, it was just a bit strange, really. But what do you think about it?
It's a really, really weird one with Max Verstappen. Either he's trying to sort of play off this, oh, I don't really care about the numbers, and I don't want to, you know, I could retire, because let's be fair, sensibly, on the salary he's allegedly on, he could retire in 2028, and I'm sure he'd live a happy, happy life. But it also would not surprise me if Max is the kind of guy that goes, oh, I could try and match, I don't know, Ayrton Senna's win records if I win these Grand Prix between now and the summer. But it's one extreme or the other, I feel, with Max. Like, it would not surprise me if he's mapped out, if he wins 16 races a year at these certain venues, then he can match X, Y, and Z's records by this point, and all that kind of stuff. Or he... Because the thing is, well, obviously, with Max is he's rare in the sense of he just cares about driving. He can win his Formula 1 World Championships, you know, whether he wins... I mean, let's be fair, it's going to be a third this year, sensibly, unless something crazy happens. He could win 3, he could win 7, he could win 10. He also could quite happily, come the end of 2028, if he's not happy with Red Bull, if he's not happy with the way the Formula 1 schedule's working, I could see him going off and doing Le Mans or something like that. I can genuinely see him being a driver that would go for the Triple Crown.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, he just loves driving, doesn't he? He spends all the time away from the track just sim racing anyway, so if it is a passion that he has, then I guess why not. I would not like to see him leave F1 in his basically his prime.
I wouldn't mind.
yeah it was very, very strange for Max, but he reminds me of a little bit of towards the end of 2021, obviously before he'd won his first title. He was playing it down massively and was like, oh, it doesn't make a difference to me if I win the title or not, it's been a great year, that kind of thing.
And then when he won the title, but that's absolutely buzzing.
Yeah.
Max was trying to do that because he knew he was cracking under the pressure.
Yeah, and still won it. So there we go.
Yeah. anyway.
Nice and early.
Jumping into the weekend, though, of course, it did not go well for the French, did it? You know, new sprint format. We'll talk about that as the podcast goes on. But that left us with just 1 hour of free practice around what is still probably technically one of Formula One's most difficult circuits, isn't it? The Alpines blew up.
Yeah, Gasly more dramatically had a fire. And Ocon, it wasn't a retirement on track, was it? But it was in the pit lane under the red flag. They realised something was wrong. So both of them had fixes to be made before qualifying, which was only a few hours later for the Grand Prix. And yeah, practice was pretty anonymous other than those incidents for Alpine. But yeah, ever since lap 56 of Melbourne, their season has kind of self-destructed.
It's impressive,
unfortunately for them.
only Alpine or Ferrari can implode that quickly.
Yeah.
Like, it's just
what
happens.
It wasn't great.
Between those teams, it's impressive just how quickly those two can just self-combust, I suppose, is probably the best way of describing it. I mean, the rest of practice was... you've obviously got all the standard stuff. People locking up, running down the escape roads, all that. Not particularly exciting jazz. But, of course, if you don't like watching practice, you can do something else with your day. It's a Friday. but then, of course, we had qualifying just a few hours after that. And immediately, Nyck de Vries, who, let's be fair, I think is probably the driver that he's most on fraud watch early on this year, goes and stacks it.
Yes, exactly. I think we spoke about this recently. Was it after Melbourne or maybe last week? I can't remember. But
We spoke about it after Melbourne, but that's because you got Sargeant and de Vries muddled up.
Oh yeah, indeed. so I think the problem, as we just said, AlphaTauri is probably the highest pressure team for the drivers to perform. Maybe not the highest, but one of the highest. And he currently isn't performing. And obviously it didn't get much better for him in the race. So he's got to pick it up quite fast. He's 28 years old. His only credible performance in F1 was pocketing Latifi on a track with 5 corners. And he hasn't really started the season very well at all for AlphaTauri. And especially when Liam Lawson is up there in the championship in Super Formula, I think someone's going to be taking a look at the contract and seeing what they can do about it. So, yeah, he's got to pick it up. I kind of, like, for his sake, I hope he does, but I also don't really care about Nyck de Vries for myself. There we go.
So, I mean, the question's got to be asked.
I'd rather
be
Lawson in, I'm not going to lie.
I mean, this is the question, isn't it? By the end of 2023, Jamie 183, will Liam Lawson have driven the AlphaTauri Formula One car in a non-practice session?
I think he will.
Do you reckon he's coming in after the summer?
If it carries on the way he's going, I think there's no way de Vries lasts the season.
Interesting.
God, clip that up and get it on the short.
That'll be going on the Instagrams and the TikToks and all that good stuff. But... yeah, I mean, obviously, like we said, obviously going into qualifying, yeah, Nyck de Vries locks up down at turn 3, was never going to make the corner. I don't know why he didn't bail out, but decided not to, so that was his qualifying run ruined. Gasly also, and this is genuinely in the notes Jamie has written for me here as a reference marker, chat. Gasly is also, but less clear-cut mistake. Jamie, do you want to explain that one?
No, it's a conditional clause based on the previous bullet point. So... clearly, like, Gasly made almost the same mistake as de Vries, but got a bit further around the corner before crashing. So
yes.
It was also a bit dumb from him. But it was, like, I think Gasly would have struggled to back out because he kind of took too much speed in and had the lockup when he was at the apex. So he kind of just made an error and couldn't have done anything about it after making the error. Thing with de Vries, he made the error and didn't admit it and then crashed.
Yeah.
So it was a bit stupid from Gasly, but a little bit less embarrassing.
And I just remembered.
Fan, so maybe.
So I just remembered why I didn't remember that incident as well. And that's because I was driving home after de Vries had already caused a red flag. But yeah, out in Q1 though, joining de Vries and Gasly were Kevin Magnussen, Nico Hülkenberg, and Zhou Guanyu. So I mean, let's be fair. If you're a fan of any three of those five drivers, for example, you must have been quite upset with that. It's a good job you
especially
don't like
Magnussen had technical. Magnussen had technical difficulties, so there were technically two spaces available to go out in Q1, and both of my two favourite drivers went out in those two spaces.
Are you saying Max isn't one of your favourite drivers?
Fun time to me. He's one of the three.
You've got like six favourite drivers. Just pack it in.
I know. I'm just turning into a sort of a Twitter account at this point.
You are, basically. Anyway, jumping into Q2, though... George Russell out there, wasn't he? Hamilton accidentally gave Oscar Piastri a tiny bit of slipstream, and that meant Russell was knocked out by, was it 4/1000ths of a second?
It was 4/1000ths, yeah. Hamilton was P10 as well. So
he was, wasn't he?
Close,
yeah.
For him as well.
Mercedes really didn't get it picked up as quickly as they wanted to.
No, especially after Russell's comments pre-weekend.
Well, I mean, we spoke about that, didn't we? Who goes into a weekend going, we've made this much progress, we're going to be fighting for the win? He didn't say we're going to fight for the win. You just don't say it. But just come in quietly like McLaren did and then do quite well.
Because they were, well, certainly in Q2, they were behind the Aston Martins and the McLarens, both of which are customer teams to Mercedes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it wasn't the best look for George Russell on a Friday. But,
they don't call him Mr. Friday.
By 4,000. Exactly.
But yeah, he was joined by Esteban Ocon, Alex Albon, Bottas and Logan Sargeant there. And of course, everyone hyping up the Williams, forgetting that it is a qualifying car and Baku has a lot of straights. But anyway, jumping into Q3 though, Jamie, we almost had a repeat of 25 and a bit years ago, didn't we?
Is that 20? Wow, my brother's old. He was born in 97. 25 years. Yeah, what, Jerez 97 with the triple tie for pole position.
Yeah, we didn't quite go that well, but...
No, well, after the first runs, it was Verstappen leading Leclerc by 0.000. So that was pretty impressive. We get, like, it's actually not that uncommon to have two people tying with how close the field is, but to have it for pole position would be ridiculous. And to have it for three cars on pole position would be practically impossible, but it happened once.
It did. Well, allegedly it happened once. Part of the F1 iceberg, we'll get to that, I'm sure, one day.
Really? Yeah. So, unfortunately, it didn't last. Well, I say unfortunately, not for Leclerc. But another thing that was going on with Q3, or all throughout qualifying, really, it became clear the Aston Martins didn't have DRS. The rear wing is supposed to open and leave a blank space, but it didn't. So they were left floundering, really, in Q3. They tried to give each other a tow, but that left them only with one lap each, because each of the runs, well, Alonso towed Stroll, and then Stroll towed to Alonso back. But they only got one lap each, so it was difficult for either of them to put it together. And I think they ended up 6th and 8th. But
Jamie,
wasn't the best for them. Yeah,
we've just had some breaking news coming in.
Oh no.
Sergio Perez has been disqualified. No. Well, actually, I was going to say there is, you've been removed from the podcast for that Taylor Swift reference. But, yeah, it was
that
bizarre.
Was smooth.
It was bizarre, because obviously Aston Martin, all weekend, of course, you know, they've been talking about this new rear wing, and I think we kind of got in with the impression that their car wasn't as good, higher speeds as everyone else. But the fact that that hadn't been tested properly on the new concept rear wing, whatever the issue was with it, is not reassuring.
No, not really. And even less assuring for McLaren was with DRS, Lando Norris was only 4 kilometres an hour faster.
One kilometre an hour. It was 3.26 up against 3.25. McLaren is still the slowest car down the straight.
Yeah, it was not a good look for that McLaren. And they actually did well to get, well, both cars into Q3, didn't they? So, yeah, fair play. Maybe the upgrades have actually worked more than Mercedes have. Well,
this was the thing, of course, and I know we mentioned this on last week's show as well. McLaren were very, very quiet not to say this was a B-spec car, which is what George Russell should have done. But... like they were very, very sensible in the way they did this, because, of course, you know, we've spoken about it before, the first three races of the year. Similar sort of story to last year for McLaren, where they really struggled at the start, but it's quite clear that this time around it was the porpoising regulations had really screwed over their car concept. So they're a good team at then getting back to the top of the midfield. But it's about making that next step, isn't it, for McLaren? I mean, really, they now have got to be going. Aston Martin have gone from here to there. How do we effectively copy that to end up in that sort of scenario? That's what McLaren need to be doing. They're not a team anymore, at least in their current guise, that can fight for world championships. But they need to be closer to the front.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess a lot of people criticise Aston Martin for copying Red Bull, basically. But if that's the way to do it, that's how you get up there, really. So I guess McLaren might be too proud to admit.
Oh, yeah, because that's worked so well for Williams over the last 15 years. Pride.
True. Yeah, maybe they just need to admit that copying other teams isn't a bad thing, especially when that team is dominating the sport.
This is always a thing as well. I remember this yesterday because it was a funny comment my dad made, which I'm going to say definitely off the bat was a joke. But he said that Adrian Newey was a traitor to his country going to Red Bull, which I didn't quite understand because, of course, the Red Bull team's based in the UK anyway, but I kind of get, obviously, what he meant by the Austrian stuff. I wonder if occasionally there are still people inside McLaren now that go, if we just paid him a bit more and given him what he wanted, we could still have Adrian Newey. McLaren could now be the most successful team in Formula 1 history had they kept onto Adrian for the last 20 years.
Yeah,
like, it's mad to think about. And I know we're going back into my let's admire Adrian Newey phase of the show, which happens every week at the moment. But, I mean, if Adrian Newey wants to come on, I think I'd be speechless for an hour, but just in awe.
Yeah, I'd just let him talk about aerodynamics and not have a clue.
We would, yeah. We would have no idea what he's saying, but we'd be here for it. But, yeah, you do wonder whether there's still that little bit of McLaren going, wish we kept him. I wish Ron Dennis wasn't such a pain.
Yeah.
But, yeah, final qualifying order. Was, of course, like we said, Charles Leclerc able to improve again by 0.2 to take pole position away from Max Verstappen. The Dutchman, for the first time, starting on the front row of the grid in Azerbaijan, ahead of Sergio Perez, Carlos Sainz there, Hamilton, Alonso, Norris, Tsunoda, Stroll and Oscar Piastri. And the great thing about a qualifying weekend like this is now the podcast segues beautifully to another qualifying session. Yay.
Yes. And we had... Well, sprint shootout, to give it its correct term, on Saturday morning, which I was surprised I got up for, but I did.
It was like 11 a.m. Yeah.
No, it was. I swear it was half nine. Was it half ten?
It was half ten. Yeah.
Oh, fair. Well, definitely should have been up then, which I was. So, yeah, shorter sessions. We had 12-minute, then 10-minute, then 8-minute for the three sessions, which I said pre-weekend I think was a bit of an improvement on the previous concept of sprint races where the sprint just decides the grid for the Grand Prix. Didn't really turn out that way, but we'll get onto that later. But yeah, sprint shootout, and the key thing I feel for anyone going into sprint shootout is do not crash, because you've got about 3 hours to fix your car for the sprint, and yeah, you don't want to, and you're in Parc Fermé, of course, so you're gonna have to start from the pit lane in the sprint if you do crash. Unfortunately, Logan Sargeant didn't adhere that advice and did indeed bin it at turn 15 in SQ1, and yeah, ruined the back end of his Williams.
Yeah, not a wise choice by Logan Sargeant. I mean, we spoke a little bit about this pre-recording. I think Sargeant was a little bit unlucky there. Those Ferraris were not in a good place. And I think that if I can understand why he crashed because of where they were. Not saying it was the Ferrari's fault, because let's be fair, Formula 1 now is racing around circuits that don't really allow cars to get out of the way of each other very easily. But I can see why Sargeant made the mistake when you've got a car on the inside of a corner there doing that. You're likely to be distracted, and turn 15 is probably the most treacherous corner in Baku.
Yeah, definitely. It's when we see most... I feel like that turn 3 or turn 15 is where we see most of the crashes, when people are pushing on qualifying laps and such. So yes, again, a bit of a rookie error, but he's made quite a few of those this year. And he's kind of
a rookie.
Yeah, yeah, but some rookies don't crash as much. I'm just going to leave it at that.
It's fair enough. It's fair enough, I suppose. Maybe still Sargeant was pushed up into Formula 1 a year too early, but... I think he's doing okay so far. And, I mean, he still did actually make it into Q2 because of that. Did screw over Star of Friday Yuki Tsunoda, though, who was about 10 yards from the start-finish line when the red flag got called, and he would have then knocked Sargeant out of Q1 there. Yeah. So it was both AlphaTauris, both Alfa Romeos, and once again, Pierre Gasly, who were out in Q1 there. What is going on with Alfa Romeo?
They're a lost cause at this point. I'm surprised they've even got any points. Their car was just so off the pace, which is really annoying. I think they've got a high downforce concept, so the next four tracks should suit them a little more. I've got to hope so, because, yeah, it's not looking good. And Gasly went out in SQ1, which meant going into the sprint race on Saturday afternoon, he'd done about 5 laps in total, which was probably not the best preparation.
No, not ideal, not ideal. SQ2 even, I should say, pretty undramatic. Of course, Sargeant out because he didn't have a car, and then also was subsequently removed from the sprint race as well because Williams couldn't get the car repaired in time. Magnussen, Ocon, Nico Hülkenberg, Oscar Piastri there, who was just 0.03 seconds behind his teammate Lando Norris. And with all the reports we've heard this weekend about Oscar Piastri with food poisoning, bless him, he did incredibly well.
He did. Unlucky to come away empty-handed, really, from the whole weekend. But, yeah.
An empty stomach,
really,
more luckily.
Drive. Yeah. Very good drive from Piastri. And obviously got the first points in Melbourne. So he'll kick on and start doing well.
Yeah. And, I mean, this kind of left us with a weird scenario by the time we got to SQ3. Obviously, like we said, in SQ1, SQ2, you can only use the mediums. In SQ3, you can only use the softs. There was a caveat to that as well, though, that they had to be a completely fresh set of tyres. So Lando Norris got into SQ3, but because he used an extra set to get into Q3 on Friday, meant that he didn't have any tyres for SQ3, except for if he and Yuki Tsunoda had both made it into SQ3, they would have probably both had to have gone out on a set of intermediate tyres and battled for P9, which is incredibly dumb.
It's just like league racing in real life, isn't it, really? Yeah. So it would have been quite funny, but I do think the teams have too much respect for the sport that if that had happened, they wouldn't have gone out. But it would have been
They would have been reprimanded, I would have thought.
They would. There's no chance they would have gone out on the dry condition.
Oh, no, they wouldn't, but that's my point. They would be reprimanded if they did.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah, that left us in SQ3. We're basically a repeat of proper Q3 in Friday qualifying with Leclerc actually in the first runs just ahead of Verstappen this time, not tying. But actually Perez was the lead Red Bull in SQ3, which is difficult to get my head around saying every time.
Yep.
On the second runs, the Red Bulls just didn't really improve. I guess the track temperature was a lot higher on the Saturday morning than it was on the Friday evening. And yeah, kind of meant that all the times were a bit slower, but the Red Bulls couldn't really get it together. And that left Leclerc was on for pole position, or sprint king, or whatever they call it these days.
And he gets a nice Pirelli hat.
He got a great hat that looks splattered in paint. But he also got a broken front wing, because he absolutely binned it at turn five, wasn't it?
It's just a Leclerc thing.
Yeah, how you crash there, I'm really not sure. But luckily, it only screwed over his teammate Carlos Sainz, so that wasn't too bad for the rest of the field. It wasn't a Monaco 21 situation, but he got pole anyway, and then pulled up in Parc Fermé with no front wing, which I feel like only Charles Leclerc in Baku would be able to do.
Yep, it is, again, just a Charles Leclerc thing. So he took both pole positions then this weekend. Ferrari are back. They're ready to fight for the wins. Ahead of Sergio Perez, Max Verstappen P3, George Russell, he said this was probably the only good lap he'd had all weekend, lined up P4 there ahead of Carlos Sainz. Hamilton in 6th, and Alex Albon, fair play to him, in P7 there, ahead of both Aston Martin, who again had no DRS, and of course Lando Norris unable to do a lap in SQ3. But, Jamie, what are our thoughts then on having two sprint qualifying sessions, apart from the fact they make doing a podcast really weird?
Yeah, and really long. We're really far in. Apologies, but I do like the concept. I think it's a positive shift for sprint races, but I do feel like they need a few more tweaks to kind of make racing for the lower end of the grid more. There needs to be more reason to do sprint races, like, because if you're qualifying 19th and you've got to finish in the top 8 for points, there's almost no point unless. Yeah, you're basically waiting for something crazy to happen. And I do think that they could maybe swap around the timing of the qualifying sessions, because a lot of people couldn't, like, watch the Friday qualifying for the Grand Prix because they're at work, because it was at, like, what, 2 o'clock, I think, or 3 o'clock or something. So potentially they do the sprint shootout on the Friday. They don't turn Parc Fermé rules on until after real qualifying on Saturday morning, for instance. That would be good. Good change.
That could work, yeah. I'm just trying to think, though, of course, because then you run the other risk of still a lot of teams don't want to risk anything in qualifying for the sprint race. It's just all still so weird, isn't it? Obviously, none of the big teams are going to... Because obviously, we'll talk about this again in just a minute, of course, from the results from the sprint. But none of the big teams are going to allow themselves to open up a scenario where the little teams have got a chance. So it just kind of feels like we're not going to... unless we get something absolutely beyond unpredictable, that anything crazy is going to happen from the sprint races. And then even then, it's unlikely anyway. I still am of the opinion that you do sprint qualifying on a Friday night, sprint race Saturday morning. Everyone then goes out in reverse sprint race finish order for a one-shot qualifying session on Saturday. That's how I think it would work. Because, of course, then you've still got the drivers that win the sprint race have got an advantage because the track's more rubbered in. But, of course, if you get some rain or something like that, then things can get mixed up a bit. Or, of course, if you mess up your lap, you're still going to be starting down the rear of the field. But it is just this whole thing, of course, if none of the big teams want any scenario where they get screwed over slightly.
Predictability. Yeah,
they just don't want it. Which I think is kind of defeating the point of what Formula One wants sprint races to be. And it feels like they just can't find what needs to work with it. And
the silver bullet for sprint races.
Yeah, I think they were also a bit screwed over as well, like we said, of course, because I think they were hoping that Baku would deliver some dramatic action, and as we'll go through, didn't really was the case, right, most of the weekend. Let's jump in though, Jamie, to the sprint race before we head too much down that rabbit hole. Charles Leclerc leads off the start, but probably the most controversial moment of the entire weekend was Max Verstappen and George Russell colliding at turn two. What are our thoughts?
Yes, well, I think it was probably on Russell mostly, if I was to apportion blame, but you can kind of see where both are coming from. Obviously it kind of blew up afterwards, because Russell was very adamant. He threw away Verstappen's criticism that he was going for a dumb move, but it is the responsibility of the overtaker to ensure there's no contact for the most part,
until he's got wheel ahead contact. And then it's
well, apparently it's fair game after that, but
the contact
was what Russell's front right corner into Verstappen's left side pod ripped quite a big hole in the side of the Red Bull, which I didn't expect the damage to be that big until he was pulled up in Parc Fermé after the race, but yeah, Verstappen had very choice words for him on the radio and in the interview afterwards. I do think it was on Russell, and Verstappen also very strongly of the opinion that it was not his fault. But the take from Verstappen that, like, why are you doing this? It's lap one. Like, you're just taking risks. No one's got any grip. Why are you doing that? This is what Verstappen's built his career on.
Yeah, exactly.
And even as a fan of Verstappen, he's trying to have his cake and eat it, I feel. Because, like, he's basically all his career has been this guy, you know, sticking it up to the big teams, the race winners. And now he's in that position. He can't expect everyone to just roll over for him when... Part of the reason that makes him so good is that he never rolled over for the powers when he was coming up through the sport. So I feel for Russell. I get his point. This one was on him, but it wasn't a penalty-worthy crash or anything like that. I can see why Verstappen's annoyed, but it's a little bit hypocritical.
Yeah, this was kind of my thinking behind it as well. Like, don't get me wrong, Verstappen wasn't in the wrong in this scenario behind the wheel. Everything he said afterwards, yeah, that's just petulant child's play, to be completely honest, in my mind. But Max has entire... So, obviously, when Max came in back in 2015, his entire appeal was built on this idea that I don't back out, it's going to be you that backs out, and if you don't, we're going to have a crash. However, that worked well against, you know, your Kimi Raikkonens, your Fernando Alonso's, your Sebastian Vettel's, your Lewis Hamilton's, that had raced each other cleanly with respect back when Formula 1 drivers had to give each other a car's width. Sounds crazy now, I know. But back then, you could battle for more than two corners. It was great. Verstappen, of course, has generated this problem that your George Russells, your Charles Leclercs, have come up through the junior ranks now, and they now play by Max Verstappen's rules. And let's be fair, Jamie, if you had a race between Max Verstappen and Max Verstappen, they would crash every single time.
Yes.
That's just what would happen. So Verstappen's whole point of, you know, it was a risky move and he knew we were going to crash and he didn't back out. It's exactly what he said at Brazil last year. Verstappen is going to very, very quickly learn, I think, behind to a lot of other drivers behind the wheel, he now has a, like, label over his... I'm trying to think of the right word, like a target on his back, a mark on his head, that sort of thing, of, you can't back out against this guy anymore. And that's... Yeah. When you've got 19 other drivers that aren't going to back out against you, you're going to realise very quickly that you're not going to get a lot of things that go your way anymore.
And this is kind of why Hamilton has mellowed and got a bit softer in World Tour Racing, because he knows that he went through the same thing. He was the young gun, like, not backing out of any moves, going for all the audacious...
No, he was better than Max.
He was. But for the time, he was the... Like, they were very aggressive moves still.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
No one really overtook at all in 2008 and 7. So, yeah, he then went through this phase of being the guy winning, and everyone racing against him has less to lose, than Hamilton does. So it makes logical sense. It's against your instincts as a racing driver, but it makes logical sense to sometimes allow people to go past you and then just pass them back later in the race.
I think the big problem still for me with this, with Max Verstappen, is he's trying to be like the new Ayrton Senna in this scenario of, I don't back out of the moves, you back out of the moves. But if you don't have the charisma behind it as well, you just look like a petulant child, don't you? And that, I mean, this whole thing of moaning on the radio and then going over, like when he did re-overtake George after the safety car, going, look, I can do it cleanly. And I'll just get a grip, mate, honestly. Like, you're, Max Verstappen is not a clean racing driver. Like, he's not. That's not his driving style. And, like, when he moans about things like that, you look at Austria 2019 against Charles Leclerc. Just barges Charles Leclerc off the road, takes the win. Red Bull, there's no problem with that. That's absolutely fine. Brazil last year...
Well, I'm just hearing salt, to be honest with you.
Either way, you can see where I'm coming from, though, can't you? And you said it yourself. Yeah. Max is trying to have his cake and eat it as well. And it's weekends like this where even you as a Max fan... Like, again, I'm not a Max Verstappen fan. You've just got to be there going, honestly, mate, wind your neck in? Like, does he genuinely believe
sometimes
he's
just hold your
better
tongue.
Than everyone else in that regard?
I do think he says some foolish things occasionally on the radio and in the interviews and whatever. So, yeah. But this one wasn't on him, but it did kind of...
But... You know, he's got to start expecting that's going to be the case now. When you try and throw your car around for the better part of a decade, other people are going to start doing that against you now. And of course, you know, for a driver like George, again, it's similar to obviously what Max said last year in Brazil, that he wasn't going to win that race, we may as well. George Russell's not in a car that's going to win races at the moment. Why shouldn't he just leave the car on the inside there and make Max's life a bit more difficult? It's just what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I mean, there was a tiny part of me, and this is... highly, highly unlikely as well, that did wonder, you know, if your Mercedes and your Ferraris get a little bit closer, could this really play into Checo's hand? You know, Max gets involved in a few unlucky incidents here and there. Could it keep Checo just that bit closer that gives him an outside chance?
Yeah, I think he was nose clean. Like, you kind of saw that in 2016, really, Hamilton-Rosberg. Like, early season, Hamilton just kept having bad starts or having poor reliability. Rosberg got the momentum and never really looked back. And
Exactly.
A few things went his way, but it's possible that the driver who is technically not quite as good as the other driver can still win a championship.
Yeah, yeah. So, of course, you know, we had, obviously, Yuki Tsunoda then at the end of lap one hit the wall in sector two. Really, really odd collision for him. To be honest, Jamie, I don't know if you found this as well. The corner I binned it on seemed way... I know, obviously, it hasn't, but the elevation on it seemed way more than it was in previous years.
Mm,
like, it seemed even more off-camber than
camber.
Normal. Tsunoda...
I think he had a puncture. I don't have any backing for that, but I think he had a puncture from...
It looked like he just went in way too hot to me. You might be right,
but
I haven't seen anything. In qualifying, it's a flat-out corner. Not in the race early on.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. don't know. Let us know if you've seen news. I don't think. Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me, but I don't think it was the case. So, of course, he brought out the safety car. I mean, to be honest, the rest of the sprint race was fairly undramatic. Max jumped George off the restart down at turn one. Sykes then gets around Hamilton, Alonso sneaks his way through as well, which is a bit unlucky for Lewis. And then, obviously, lap seven, Sergio Perez jumps Charles Leclerc for the lead. Top three sail off into the... Well, basically the top seven or top eight, really, don't they? Sail off into the distance. Lando Norris, who'd started on the... He was one of three drivers, wasn't he, who started on the softs. It was Lando and both Alfa Romeos, if I'm not mistaken. The softs didn't work. They basically lasted three laps. So Oscar Piastri jumped him. And then, yeah, later on in the day, Stroll gets Alex Albon as well. To be honest, I was surprised he was still behind him. But that meant that Sergio Perez takes the win in the sprint race ahead of Charles Leclerc, Max Verstappen, Russell, Sainz, Alonso, Hamilton, Stroll. So the big four teams took all the points in the sprint, which is exactly what they wanted.
Yeah, yeah. Just handing out points to the teams in power.
The rich get richer.
Obviously, the sprint doesn't really have an effect anymore on the Grand Prix. So we had reset to the Friday qualifying results for the Sunday Grand Prix, apart from Esteban Ocon and Nico Hülkenberg, who both chose to start from the pit lane. I think they wanted to make setup changes after how badly they did in the sprint, really. So they both started from the pits, which didn't really have that much of an effect on the grid. I think Ocon qualified 13th and Hulk was, what, 17th or 16th. So, yeah, not much difference to the grand scheme of things. And yeah, the race starts and all was normal. So not much really happened. The one bit of potential excitement in the Grand Prix was fairly standard. Leclerc just led from Max and Perez. The only bit of contact came into turn two with Albon up the inside of Piastri, who also had a car on his outside, so three wide, and Albon lost a little bit of front wing. I don't know if Piastri got any damage, but it didn't seem like that bad if he did. And also Bottas took a little bit of a hit as well, which ruined his diffuser for the rest of the race, which I guess was a shame for him, but I don't think Alfa Romeo were up to much anyway, so didn't really
probably a good excuse as much as anything else for Alfa Romeo. Just another weekend. I mean, what's that, like the third race this year Bottas has been half a lap back after three laps or something?
Yeah,
just does not seem to get any luck after Bahrain, does poor Valtteri?
No.
But yeah, then of course the DRS gets enabled. I mean, we all knew what was going to happen. Charles Leclerc, let's be fair, even Ferrari basically was saying, everyone was basically saying, it was a case of when rather than if he got jumped by the Red Bulls, and they flew past him pretty much immediately, didn't they?
They did. Lap three for Perez, and then I think
for Max
one lap later, for Verstappen, sorry, and then one lap later for Perez. So yeah, it was a shame for Leclerc, but he did see it coming, and he knew basically from the point of getting pole position that all that was going to happen was his pole position record
stat pad
even worse.
not ideal for Charlie Boy. 20%
conversion rate from pole to win,
less than that now, I think. No, just over. So 21.1, 19 poles and what's it, four wins,
yeah,
madness. Absolutely no, five wins, I think.
Is it
four or is it five?
No, it is five.
It is five. But yeah, I mean, already though, I mean, we saw obviously the medium tyres able to survive 17 laps. Oh, excuse me, on sprint race Saturday. The drivers did not want to do that come Sunday. Hamilton, first one to box on just lap 9 of the GP. And then pretty much as he's pit, Nyck de Vries goes and bins it at turn 6, but the opposite end of turn 6 to how Charles Leclerc binned it in qualifying.
Yeah, and this was, again, a really rookie error from De Vries. And I hate to be the critical guy. I feel like all I do on this podcast is criticise Nyck de Vries, but even when it's not his fault, as in Melbourne. But yeah, it was a very, stupid mistake to make. Just turned in too early into turn six.
I mean, who would do that in Baku and ruin a good chance of a good race?
I prefer not to speak. If I speak, I'm in big trouble. Looks back at 2017 in anger. No. But yeah, that broke his front left corner and was stranded on the runoff at the exit of turn 6 into turn 7. So yeah, I thought when I saw that, oh, safety car's going to be deployed, surely, because you can see on the picture the front left wheel is just pointing the wrong direction. But I don't think anyone else actually saw that, apart from, like, me, because everyone on the commentary teams and, like, everyone in the FIA apparently thought, oh, his engine's still running, he could probably reverse back, even though he's got a damaged front left corner completely.
Well, because it straightened back up again when he stopped.
I don't know. Maybe I'm giving myself too much credit, but it was
maybe
quite obviously
glass
going to be a
safety
car. Yeah, potentially. Who knows? but Verstappen needed to pit that lap anyway, lap 10. And I guess Red Bull saw this and was like, oh, that's going to be a safety car, or at least a VSC. Let's pit and get a free stop. And then the FIA waited just long enough to make Verstappen go through the pits at racing speed and then called the safety car out. Which was maybe trying to keep the championship interesting, but I'll leave it there.
Well, I think Red Bull were obviously trying to go the other way, weren't they? They were like, oh, we can easily just get Max way out in the lead now. So there's not even a fight for the dub today. But yeah, definitely not the way it worked out. And of course, that meant that Verstappen and Hamilton both got bumped back down. Verstappen ended up behind Charles and Sergio Perez now, who've been promoted to the lead. And then Hamilton got pushed all the way down to P10, wasn't it, I think, off the safety car. But things pretty much, of course, once they got the freeze car out of the way, pretty much went back to normal. Verstappen literally got Charles again off the restart, second time he'd done that this weekend. And Hamilton obviously passed. It was Ocon and Hülkenberg, wasn't it, who'd started on the hard tyres, but then we're going to have to pit late on in the day. Unfortunately as well, and I know we've spoke about this before, the safety car came out at pretty much the perfect time, that then meant, with the exception of Hulk and Ocon, everyone now was in the positions they were basically going to stay in for the rest of the Grand Prix, unless they were behind a car that was much quicker. So Hamilton basically was the only one who then, of course, flew back past those hard compound runners. And, I mean, there were still a few more things that happened, but pretty much from then on, the race was set in stone.
Yeah, safety cars in pit windows always ruin races, unless there's another safety car later on, just because there's no strategy variation at all, because everyone pits on the same lap, or plus or minus one, usually. No. So,
and I think
it was
the softest tyres were the wrong choice this weekend, weren't they? Now, the fact the hards the hard tyres could do the entire Grand Prix, but nothing else was worth having.
If they had a step harder, like, the medium tyres would have done the whole Grand Prix.
Yeah, but then you could have still had a bit of a gamble between, like, they should have gone with the hardest compound, so you could have had, like, soft medium.
Maybe, because if they make one of the tyres completely useless, which is basically what they did with the soft, but then the hard were too hard, if you get what I mean. Yeah. So,
just Pirelli things, isn't it?
I don't know. Yeah, yeah.
Jamie, read out the next note you've got on it.
Another thing on the restart. Well, coming into exit of turn 3 into turn 4, Fernando Alonso, who's running P5, sees a blank space up the inside of Carlos Sainz.
Definitely aren't making it to episode 112.
Oh, I'm disappointed that I've used the same reference twice. I'll have to work on that.
You have kind of ruined that.
But Alonso was just the better man and took the inside line.
I don't even know whether that is a Taylor Swift reference. I'm so old.
Yes, it is. Shamelessly. took the inside of Carlos Sainz. Really opportunistic. I don't think Sainz saw it coming. Alonso took P4 for Aston Martin. So good stuff from him. And then the other Aston Martin a few laps later was running P7, and Alonso, on the radio, basically said, I've changed my brake balance and it's working really well. You should tell Lance to do the same thing. I assume Lance did the same thing and then completely messed up for the final corner. Went wide, which handed Hamilton the position on a plate, which makes Alonso the anti-hero in this situation, because...
Is that a Taylor Swift reference?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I don't know
you're really
any.
Out of the loop, aren't you?
I really don't know any of her songs.
Oh dear. So Stroll lost that place to Hamilton, who raced himself into P7. I think
six
at that point. Was it P6?
It was.
Oh, yeah,
Russell
was
six.
Rubbish, wasn't he?
Yeah, Russell was eighth, pretty much all day.
Yeah. Yeah. Shame for him.
But, I mean, let's be fair, Jamie, pretty much nothing else happened throughout most of the Grand Prix.
This was lap
boring.
16 or something?
Yeah, about lap 16, Stroll did that. We had 35 racing laps to go. You basically then had Perez and Max, every 10 laps or so, one of them would get very close to a wall. And Ocon and Hulkenberg, because the hard tyres, sorry, could just go all day, they basically were screwed over because there wasn't going to be another safety car. But also, the cars behind them weren't any quicker than them, so they were just out there forever. The only real things that happened were Zhou Guanyu retired from the Grand Prix later on with mechanical issues, and then we had what on earth was that final lap with the park fermé.
Oh, yeah. And to be fair, the Ted Kravitz commentary was, there was something, it felt like a disaster film when everything's going wrong.
Well, let's be fair, it could have been really bad.
Yeah, it could have been awful. But basically, Esteban Ocon hasn't done his mandatory pit stop yet, as Perez is coming basically around the final corner of the last sector. So they've closed the pit, well, they haven't closed it, but they've effectively put Parc Fermé out. They've put the pit boards out for P1, 2 and 3. And all the camera people are getting into position to be able to take the pictures of the winner and the podium. But they haven't realised, or they haven't remembered, that Esteban Ocon is still going to come through the pit lane on the final lap of the race to change his tyres, which some of the photographers had realised and were basically shouting like it was some sort of disaster movie. Like, get out of the pit lane, get out of the fast lane, Ocon's coming. And thankfully, at the last minute, they did. But it was an absolute farce that it got so close to just Ocon running over about 30 people. So
brave as well to put it on live TV.
Yeah,
no, that was an interesting choice.
Probably not. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thinking about it, they usually are better than that. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
But thankfully, Ocon was fully in control of his car. He could have stopped had he needed to, and no one was hurt. But it was definitely a warning, like a massive red flag for the F1 FIA to address, because it was similar. Like, Albon had this last year, didn't he, pitting on the last lap
in Australia? Yeah,
just people walking around the pit lane like it was the end of the race, when it's not. The race is still going on.
I mean, let's be fair, as well, let's obviously, again, you know, you've got to think, I mean, if you're talking health and safety, you've got to think of every hypothetical that could ever happen as well. Let's say Ocon had a puncture coming into that pit lane or something. He could have very easily ping-ponged off those barriers. Because obviously it's a fast pit entry at Baku as well, let's not forget. He could have ripped off both front wheels and just ploughed into where they were setting up Parc Fermé, for all we know.
Yeah.
You also
forgot
to mention,
like, a brake-by-wire failure or something.
Exactly. I mean, we also got to mention, of course, you had Red Bull pit crew that were running across the pit lane as well, because they obviously wanted to celebrate Checo winning.
Yeah.
It was not a good look for Formula One. And I mean, they've done their investigation, they reported themselves to the stewards, and they went, sorry, we were naughty, it won't happen again, despite the fact it's happened twice.
I think they will make some
changes.
They promised to make changes for Miami, which seems very quick turnaround for Formula 1.
They shouldn't be setting up Parc Fermé until cars have finished. I get that they want to try and make it look like a smooth production and all that, but let's be fair, Baku's a long circuit. Like, on a cooldown lap, it's probably going to take you a good 3 minutes to get around. Like, you've got time.
Yeah, you absolutely have. And that was, kind of the most dramatic part of the Grand Prix, which was a shame, and not the best note to end the race on. But another thing that was kind of bubbling under, you had Verstappen kind of gapping, like they were basically trading fastest laps at the end, but Verstappen was close to Perez at the end. It was hovering around the second mark. And also Alonso had, kind of latched onto the fact there was a podium up for grabs potentially. He saw red in front of him in Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari, but unfortunately Leclerc was able to shake it off and didn't succumb to Fernando Alonso behind him, and Alonso had to settle for fourth. But it was only 0.6 of a second over the line, so really close stuff for Alonso to almost grab his fourth podium of the year.
Yeah, the podium streak comes to an end. I mean, this was something I wanted to mention quickly, Jamie, because I know you actually read through the comments as well on our predictions, so we're going to do this this week.
I actually didn't look through the comments, unfortunately.
There was some
good thing, really.
When Alonso finish in three races on podium, but you're still putting Russell and Hamilton. Yes, Russell and Hamilton weren't the right choices this weekend, but we didn't put Alonso on there, and we were correct. And I think that segues us quite nicely, doesn't it, Jamie, to our predictions recap 12 points available this weekend. And it did not go well.
No. Bit too much faith in Mercedes. I listen to George Russell too much.
Yeah, you've learned from the book of Russell, which was not wise. I stopped making that mistake last year, luckily, as a George Russell fan. But we both said Verstappen for sprint pole. We both got that wrong. You said George Russell for the sprint race. I said Verstappen. We both got that wrong. You said Verstappen. I said Perez for qualifying. I did get Perez ahead of Verstappen, correct? But we both got that wrong.
No, you didn't. Not in real quali.
Oh yeah, not even in real qualifying. Yeah, so that was, well, neither of us got the points there either. And your top three was Verstappen, Russell, Hamilton, which netted you 1 out of 12 points.
One.
I got Verstappen, Perez, Hamilton, which netted me 2 out of 12 points. Yeah. So really not a good weekend there. really not a good weekend for either of us there. No. But I think it does mean now on the scores, it's 13-10 in your favour. So I don't know if you want to update the Discord quickly.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll do.
Not ideal by either of us there.
Hang on, it must be 14 to me, because I got 6 in Melbourne. Yeah, it must be 14.
You're just giving yourself 3 points now. 10. No, call it 13-10, thank you.
No, but I got 6 in Melbourne and 1 here, and it was 7 before that.
Okay, fine. 14-10 to Jamie. I'm closing back in. Indeed. Rather at a rapid rate of knots. It must be said.
Oh yeah, keep that up,
Jamie. Who
we
was
go through the order, did we?
We didn't. Sorry, yeah. Do you want to quickly run through those before I ask you was your driver of the day? Yeah.
Well, Perez won the race, of course. Verstappen made it a 1-2. I think it's only the third time in Verstappen's career that he's finished second in his team's 1-2, which is a bit weird.
Malaysia 2016, yeah, and. Mm-hmm. Malaysia 2016 and Monaco last year.
No,
Sainz was
P2,
wasn't it?
Two races ago in Jeddah, wasn't it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
So yeah, Verstappen doesn't often finish second in a 1-2 finish, but he did. Leclerc was third, Alonso P4, Sainz finished fifth with Hamilton close on his tail at the end. Stroll in 7th, Russell making it a whitewash for the top 8, as it was in the sprint, with the big 4 teams, with Norris grabbing 9th and Tsunoda getting his second 10th place in a row.
It is hilarious when you look at the championship standings. Tsunoda has had 2 10ths and 2 11ths so far, and he's 16 in the championship.
Yeah, well, Melbourne just basically gave everyone points who hadn't had them already.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, yeah, yeah. Hulk still chilling in the top 10 based off one result. We love that.
Bottas can't be far away still from one result, is he?
Bottas is 12th, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Look at that, eh? Jamie 183, driver of the weekend.
Driver of the weekend. I feel like I have to give it to Perez, but that's very boring. But he did, to be fair to him, make use of every opportunity that came his way. And quite comprehensively, after the safety car obviously handed in the lead, he was extremely accomplished in his drive.
He did do very, very well. Charles Leclerc, I think, definitely deserves a shout out. I think sensibly that car shouldn't have been on pole. But it's the first time this year Red Bull have looked challenged whatsoever. Of course, it didn't quite work out on Sunday. But obviously, Charles Leclerc, finally a weekend that goes right for him. This year. Mm-hmm. Oscar Piastri, I think, is another one that deserves a shout-out, mainly for the fact that, you know, I don't think having food poisoning is at all ever fun, but still being able to stay quite close to Lando Norris despite that is worthy of a shout-out in my eyes. And Yuki Tsunoda, you know, made that mistake on race day. I'm scrapping Yuki Tsunoda. No, because he still scored points, didn't he?
He got 10th, after qualifying 7th in the
I was thinking of the sprint race incident then for some reason. Apart from the sprint race incident, he had another very, very good weekend in an AlphaTauri car that both of us still think is pretty dog poo. But I think for me then, I'm going to say Charles Leclerc, driver of the weekend.
Fair enough. Got both positions, obviously, and first podium of the year, so that's fair enough.
Exactly. Ferrari's first podium of the year as well. Oh, race rating.
Yeah.
Two?
Two's generous.
I think, you know, for me, Spa was a one. It wasn't quite as bad as Spa, like, in 2021, that is.
What happened in... Oh. Yeah, I suppose it wasn't an absolute mess or awful.
It almost so was, yeah, but...
Give it a two.
Four out of 20 had Ocon for the Azerbaijan Grand Prix.
Run down those people, it would have been a one.
And you know what, Jamie? You know what's even better about that?
What's
Baku,
that?
There were, what, 13 overtakes on race day Sunday? We've got Miami, Imola, Monaco and Spain up next in the next six weeks.
No. It's just going to be here's the prediction. It's going to be a 2019 style season where the first eight races are really dull.
Yeah.
And from that point on,
every 2019 had some drama. Monaco was good.
Yeah, after eight races.
Kind of.
Monaco wasn't that
Canada
good.
Canada was... Well, you had Verstappen versus Hamilton.
Canada was
quite dramatic.
The point it got good.
Bahrain had Ferraris with a traditional bottle job. But yeah, we're in for a long few weeks, aren't we?
Yeah. Tune back in July when the season actually gets interesting.
Exactly, yeah. Make sure you're back here in July, 2 months from now. But of course, Jamie, we're gonna quickly end off with this week's quiz. Formula One is heading to the Miami Grand Prix. This might have been a better quiz for Miami, but I'm sticking with it. Since we are not including the Indy 500 or all of the races at Watkins Glen, because there's just too many obscure names for you, I think, there.
Okay.
So since Formula One went to Phoenix in 1989, I want you, let me just get on my list quickly, 10
every winner of the,
different drivers have won the US Grand Prix.
Only 10?
Only 10. Name me them.
Wow. Valtteri Bottas, Max Verstappen.
I haven't given
Lewis
you a timer,
Hamilton,
I just realised. But
Sebastian
you probably
Vettel.
Won't need one.
All right, keep going.
Yeah, keep going.
Rosberg, I don't think, did. Hamilton said that. Schumacher in 05. Who else won it? Indianapolis. Alonso?
Nope.
No. Barrichello? They did the finish, didn't they? The joint finish.
Yep.
Keke Rosberg, did you want it? No, that was before his
that
time,
was
wasn't
way
it?
Way before, yeah. No, he didn't either.
Mansell, Piquet, Senna, Prost.
Yep, Senna, Prost is correct.
Hill,
no.
Häkkinen.
There was no US Grand Prix between 92 and 2000.
Andretti? No.
Way too early.
How many got left?
Two.
Any modern ones? No,
yes.
I don't think so. Oh. Ralf Schumacher?
No.
Trulli? No, he
no.
won, didn't he? 06. Someone would have won on 06. Oh, I don't know.
Unless I misheard you, you forgot a
I said
really...
Vettel.
Yeah. You've got two more, Jamie. One, I'm going to give you another 15 seconds, I think, because I forgot to give you a timer here.
Who won last year? Verstappen?
Hamilton.
10 seconds. Oh, Raikkonen.
Yes, that's one of them. You got one more.
Jody Scheckter.
Your time is up. No, Jody Scheckter was back in the 70s, my friend. You forgot one. The 2001 winner of the US Grand Prix.
DC?
Nope.
Montoya?
Nope.
Oh, I don't know.
Mika Häkkinen.
I said Häkkinen.
Did you? I didn't hear you then.
I absolutely said Häkkinen.
That was
when you told me there were no races in the 90s. I definitely said Häkkinen.
You did not say Häkkinen.
No, I'm claiming that.
You did not say Häkkinen. 9 out of 10, though. It's not bad.
No, 10 out of 10.
No, it's not. I'm not giving you that. I think that, though, has wrapped us up for this week's show. Apologies to the four of you that might still care, but we're no longer featuring F1 Fantasy because F1 clearly don't care about it, so why should we? Essentially, I will still be looking at the league and things like that, and I genuinely am disappointed with how little Formula One has done with F1 Fantasy this year. But we're boycotting it. We're going to make a difference because one podcast not talking about it will see a rapid decline
in
the four people that still check their fantasy team. But Jamie, is there anything else to add? I think, to be honest, it's been a miracle we've made this weekend's Baku Grand Prix a one-hour show, to be honest.
Yeah, we didn't spend long talking about the GP, but that's kind of how it went. So.
Yeah, exactly. There was more to talk about that surrounded the rest of the weekend. Thank you all so much for watching then. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure to leave a like, get yourself subscribed, follow us on all the various bits of social media as well. And we will be back later on this week then to preview the Miami Grand Prix. We've got a lot of podcasts coming up. We'll be in episode 200 before any of you know it, which is rather worrying.